From Jakarta, here is the Voice of Indonesia with English program. Presenting news, information, and entertainment from Indonesia. You can listen our broadcast and online streaming, voanews.id. Hello listener, how are you? I'm Stefanus, will be in here with you for the next 60 minutes. We will present various programs for you, like the news, commentary, light info, and also pop songs from Indonesia. And listener, we will have first the news, so stay tuned with us in Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world, on the frequencies of 3325 kHz and voanews.id.
This is Aniasana with news. First, the headlines. Jakarta is set to extend large-scale social restrictions. The United Kingdom is throwing everything at developing the COVID-19 vaccine. And now the news in detail. The United Kingdom government is throwing everything at developing a coronavirus vaccine. Human trials for a vaccine developed by the University of Oxford would begin on Thursday. Nuka Kusumawati has the details.
The UK has recorded another 823 coronavirus hospitals death, taking the total number to 17,337. Official figures shows death hit a 20-year high in England and Wales in the week up to 10 April, nearly doubled what would have been expected, driven by 6,200 fatalities attributed to coronavirus. These figures cover all settings, including care homes and death in the communities as well as hospitals. UK's Health Secretary Matt Hancock explained on Tuesday that the UK had invested more money than any other country to develop the vaccine.
The UK is at the forefront of the global effort. We've put more money than any other country into the global search for a vaccine. And for all the efforts around the world, two of the leading vaccine developments are taking place here at home at Oxford and Imperial. Both of these promising projects are making rapid progress. And I've told the scientists leading them that we'll do everything in our power to support. First, I'm today making £22.5 million available to the Imperial project to support their phase two clinical trials, which are going to assess a sample of several thousand, and for them to begin the work on subsequently a very large phase three trial. Second, I'm today making available £20 million to the Oxford team to fund their clinical trials. The team have accelerated that trials process, working with the regulator, the MHRA, who have been absolutely brilliant. And as a result, I can announce that the vaccine from the Oxford project will be trialled in people from this Thursday.
The health secretary added that there had been more than 8,000 offers of help from UK's companies, and the government was now working with 159 UK's manufacturers. The UK was in direct talks with companies abroad to buy items, especially in China. Meanwhile, an RAF plane is expected to bring a shipment of PPE from Turkey to the UK later. On the same occasion, Professor Jonathan Van Dam, the Deputy Chief Medical Officer for England, said that the latest figures showed the number of people in hospital with COVID-19 has started to decline in London, but not elsewhere in the country. Either way, UK remains in danger.
The numbers remain high, and it isn't clear that there is an enormous downturn at this point. So the numbers are varying day to day, but they remain high, and we remain in a situation of danger that we must take very seriously indeed.
Professor Van Dam added that he is not sure it will go down in the days and weeks that follows, But the UK must keep pushing on this and must bend the curve through actions. The latest figures also showed that 18,206 tests were conducted in the 24 hours to 9 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday, despite the government saying there was the capacity for almost 40,000 people.
Iran said it put its first military satellite into orbit Wednesday, making it an emerging world power, as U.S. President Donald Trump issued a new threat amid rising naval tensions in the Gulf. As quoted by AFP.com, on Wednesday, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps broke the news of what it said was its own satellite launch, hailing it as a milestone for the country's space program. The Guard's commander, Hussein Salami, stated that its sight is looking at the Earth from the sky, and it is the beginning of the formation of the world power. The United States alleges that Iran's satellite program is a cover for its development of missiles, including ones that could one day carry nuclear warheads. Iran maintains it has no intention of acquiring nuclear weapons and says its aerospace activities are peaceful and comply with the UN Security Council resolution. The U.S. President Donald Trump said Wednesday he had ordered the U.S. military to attack and destroy any Iranian vessel that harasses U.S. Navy ships. As quoted by AFP.com on Wednesday, Trump said on Twitter that he has instructed the United States Navy to shoot down and destroy any and all Iranian gunboats if they harass the U.S. ships at sea. The order came 1 week after 11 small-armed Iranian Revolutionary Guards Corps speedboats swarmed around the U.S. Navy and Coast Guard ships in international waters in the Northern Gulf. The incident took place while the U.S. vessels were engaged in exercises as part of their patrols in the region. No shots were fired, but the Pentagon said the Iranians engaged in dangerous and provocative actions that risk collision or worse. Prime Minister of Spain Pedro Sanchez stated, provided authorities to stay on top of the virus, and Spain will slowly ease its nationwide lockdown in the second half of May. As quoted by BBC.com Wednesday, Pedro Sanchez asked Parliament in Madrid for a third extension to the state of emergency until May the 9th. The government has also announced looser restrictions on children, allowing them to leave the house. Spain imposed its lockdown on March the 14th with some of the tightest restrictions in Europe. Currently, children are not allowed outside for any reason. After mounting criticism, the government announced plans on Tuesday to allow those aged 14 and under out for walks from April the 26th. This news comes to you from Voice of Indonesia in Jakarta. The Jakarta provincial government is set to extend large-scale social restrictions, or PSBB, which have been implemented in the city since April 10 to curb coronavirus transmissions. As quoted by Antara News Agency, second chairman of the Jakarta COVID-19 Task Force, Chatur Laswanto, on Wednesday stated that the number of coronavirus cases has continued to increase, so Jakarta administration will extend the large-scale social restrictions. According to the COVID-19 official website, Jakarta had recorded more than 1,700 confirmed coronavirus cases on April the 10th, the first day of the implementation of large-scale social restrictions. The number has more than doubled to more than 3,300 as of Wednesday, April 22nd. Deputy Chairman of the Jakarta Legislative Assembly, Muhammad Taufik, has urged Governor Anies Baswedan to propose the extension of large-scale social restrictions to the Health Ministry amid fears the transmission of coronavirus in the capital will get worse unless the large-scale restriction is extended. The Indonesian Embassy in Canberra has urged Indonesians in Australia to join a caring and sharing program and distribute aid to fellow nationals who have been hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic. As quoted by Antara News Agency, the Indonesian Embassy in Canberra revealed on Wednesday that in the first phase of the relief program, 88 packages containing staple food have been distributed to Indonesians from April 16 to April 22nd. The second phase would be carried out during the fasting month of Ramadan. The aid program is aimed at helping Indonesians stay strong in the face of an uncertain future amid the Australian government's plan to extend social restrictions for 4 more weeks as part of efforts to curb the spread of COVID-19. And the last item, Indonesia's representative in the ASEAN Intergovernmental Commission on Human Rights, Yuyun Wahyuningsi, encouraged ASEAN countries to promote the human rights approach in handling the COVID-19 pandemic. This was conveyed in a virtual seminar on the protection of fundamental human rights in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic Wednesday in Jakarta. According to Yuyun, this effort can be done through a number of steps, including by utilizing the ASEAN Response Fund. She said that the funds could be used to build small and medium enterprises in the community. While in terms of disaster management, she encouraged countries in ASEAN to increase cooperation in areas that directly touch the needs of the community, such as food, clean water, and medicine.
ASEAN need to look at or to use a human rights-based approach and gender-sensitive in addressing COVID-19. I welcome ASEAN initiative to come up with a joint medical research and development of vaccine. And I would like to suggest that ASEAN COVID-19 response funds to have the element or dimension to focus more on building the SMEs or reviving the SMEs and support women in the use of the funds. And for the mitigating impact, ASEAN may want to have a cooperation in relation to the essentials like food, clean water, medicines, and maximizing the digital technology.
Meanwhile, related to social protection in ASEAN, Yuyun Wahyuningsi highlighted the importance of health protection for migrant workers who are widely available in the ASEAN countries. According to her, the migrant workers have become one of the victims affected by the COVID-19 pandemic when the destination country and country of origin imposed the quarantine. Yuyun underlined the importance of health protection that is recognized equally in all ASEAN countries. According to her, this can protect migrant workers wherever they work in all ASEAN member countries.
ASEAN need to strengthen its existing cooperation in relation to universal health coverage, especially for migrant workers. So ASEAN need to come up with a portable insurance, health insurance for migrant workers so they can be served anywhere they work, any country in ASEAN where they are working.
ASEAN member countries have earlier had a history of dealing with the spread of SARS and MERS viruses. This experience, according to Yuyun, should be able to encourage countries in ASEAN to increase their response to the pandemic. She also hoped that the countries in ASEAN could immediately share in the economy after the pandemic decrease and could restore market confidence in the ASEAN economic development efforts in the post-pandemic. And listener, that's the news.
Finally, Indonesian government officially banned this year's Eid al-Fitr homecoming across the country. This aims to decrease human mobility and COVID-19 spread at the same time. Government's urge to ban the homecoming emerged after the large-scale social distancing and physical distancing were imposed to prevent COVID-19 spread. On Tuesday, April 21st, in a closed cabinet meeting, President Joko Widodo finally decided to ban the homecoming. It also aims to create sense of security and comfort for people in regions. Besides that, government will monitor the homecoming flow with monitoring pauses at several spots for land, air, and sea transport. This ban applies since Friday, April 24th. Meanwhile, Ad Interim Transportation Minister Luhut Binsar Panjaitan said that they will impose sanction in form of fine and imprisonment for people who insist to go. The sanction will apply on May 7, 2020. The main ban is for red zones. As known, virus incubation period in human body is around 14 days. So if someone who is healthy today but already infected go to their hometown, this person will spread it to everyone contacting with him. Actually, homecoming ban had been recommended by health experts in the end of 2019. Until now, cure or vaccine for COVID-19 is yet to be invented. Scientists are still trying to find it. Back to homecoming, although a little bit late, government's official ban again had relieved people who care about their health and lives. As mentioned earlier but mentioned again here with additional info, aspects that support homecoming ban had been implemented, such as early policies ketupat operation and some incentive by government for businesses affected by the large-scale social distancing. Social and financial schemes have been given to all regions affected by COVID-19. Certainly, with the homecoming ban, people of Indonesia can still celebrate the Eid al-Fitr and maintain the connection or silaturahim. However, the more significant meaning of one Syawal or Eid is to get closer to the God by praying at home. And listener, that was the commentary.
Voice of Indonesia.
Listener, meet again with me, Ahmad Faisal, in our regular program, Today in History, over the Voice of Indonesia. We start from an event on April 23, 1984, when virus causes AIDS to be found by U.S. researchers. On April 23, 1984, Minister of Health and Human Services of the United States of America, Margaret Heckler, announced that Dr. Robert Gallo and his partners at National Cancer Institute have found the cause of AIDS, retrovirus that they gave a label of HTLV-3. Heckler also announced development of diagnostic blood tests to identify HTLV-3. Next event is the World Book Day. In 1995, the United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, held a general conference in Paris, France, which decided that April 23rd is the commemoration of World Book Day based on La Diada, the San Jordi celebration in Catalonia, Spain, in the 15th century. Festival of the La Diada de Sant Jordi was identical with men who gave roses to their lovers. Books traders began to influence the tradition. Women began to give books to the men as roses substitute. In addition, some European famous writers were born and passed away on April 23rd. The commemoration of the World Book Day is a form of appreciation among the authors, publishers, distributors, bookkeeping organizations, and communities that cooperate to promote books in a bid to enhance the socio-cultural values of humanity. The last event is that in 2007, Boris Yeltsin passed away. Boris Nikolayevich Yeltsin was a Russian politician and the first president of the Russian Federation, serving from 1991 to 1999. Yeltsin's era was a dramatic period in Russian history on which it was signed by changing of revolutionary politics, democracy, the big problems of politics, economy and social matter. One of them was rampant corruption. On 12 June 1991, He was elected by popular vote to the newly created post of President of the Russian Soviet Federative Socialist Republic, or RSFSR. In August 1991, Yeltsin got international praise because he was a brave Democrat. He was able to fight a coup attempt by hardline communists. In his period, Yeltsin cut government budget on a large scale with the aim of balancing state revenues and expenditures and borrowing funds from Western countries. But this resulted in Russia falling in a great economic crisis in 1998, judged by some experts to be more severe than the Great Depression in European and American countries in the decade of the 1930s. Boris Yeltsin passed away on April 23, 2007, due to heart failure. Well, listener, that was Today in History, read by Ahmad Faisal.
Takkan pernah terlintas untuk tinggalkan kamu jauh dariku, kasihku, karena aku milikmu, kamu milikku, separuh nyawaku. Hidup bersamamu, berdua kita lewati, meski hujan badai takkan berhenti,
takkan berhenti.
Sehidup semati, mentari pun tahu ku cinta padamu. Percaya aku takkan kemana-mana, aku kan selalu ada temani hingga hari tua. Percaya aku takkan kemana-mana, setia akan ku jaga kita teman bahagia. Takkan pernah ku lupa kamu yang ku cinta, dari ujung kaki hingga ujung kepala. Aku ingin kamu, kamu yang ku mau, belahan jiwaku, kamu masa depanku. Berdua kita lewati, meski hujan badai takkan berhenti. Sehidup semati, mentari pun tahu ku cinta padamu. Percaya aku takkan kemana-mana, aku kan selalu ada temani hingga hari tua. Percaya aku takkan kemana-mana, setia akan ku jaga.
Listener, you're still with us in the Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world, on 3325 kHz and voicenews.id. Next, we are going to present to you My Indonesia.
Voice of Indonesia.
Today's My Indonesia title, Empowerment of Community Amid Pandemic Through Wake Kambas National Park Mangrove Rehabilitation. The Ministry of Environment and Forestry is carrying out effort to rehabilitate the mangrove forests at buffer zone of Waikambas National Park area, Lampung Province, through the empowerment of forest farmer groups and communities around the forest area. Hadofdas Putih Wei Sekampung Watershed and Protected Forest Management Center, ED Bantara, on Sunday, April 19, said that the rehabilitation activities that use community empowerment methods is expected to increase the income of farmer groups and surrounding communities, both wages and material supply. All materials such as seeds and labor are taken from the potential provided around the location. This activity is also part of efforts to address the socio-economic problems as the impact of COVID-19 pandemic. ED Bantara said, this year 90,750 mangrove stems had been planted in an area of 25 hectares with 319 million rupiah budget. In addition to successfully the rehabilitation of 25 hectares and improving the welfare of the surrounding community, Bantara also hope the activity will protect coastal areas of the Waikambas National Park boundaries from the danger of abrasion and seawater intrusion. Moreover, the rehabilitation is also aimed to increase the quality of the ecosystem of the coastal area, biodiversity, as well as the preservation of Waikambas National Park area, both socially and technically. Listener, that was My Indonesia.
From Jakarta, here is the Voice of Indonesia with English program.
Membuatku bahagia.
You are still with us in Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world, on 3325 kHz and voinews.id. Listener, next we are going to invite you to visit various places of Indonesia to know about its tourism objects or some local wisdom that we have only on Indonesian Wonder.
Welcome back to Indonesian Wonder. Today I'm going to let you know Dutungan Island in South Sulawesi. Stay tuned. Dutungan Island is located at Palandro Village, Malusatesi District, Baru Regency, South Sulawesi. The island can be accessed for 3.5 hours from Makassar City, with a distance around 132 kilometers. From Makassar, you will head to Baru City by land transportation. Then from Ujung Indah Dock, Baru City, the trip continues by using boat for around 10 to 15 minutes to Dutungan Island. Rental boat only operates from 6 a.m. until 5 p.m. To cross the island, visitors will be charged around 40,000 rupiah per person. Dutungan Island is a 9 hectares wide and hilly land which is surrounded by white sand and blue and clear sea panorama. The area is also surrounded by plantation and forest, which is quite large and becomes habitat of various kinds of birds. Meanwhile, coastal area of the island is also divided into two areas, namely white sand and mangrove forest areas. If visitors want to enjoy the beauty of undersea of Dutungan Island, there is available rental equipment for snorkeling and buoy with rental price of 50,000 rupiah per day. For those who have fishing hobby, you can also catch fish at surrounding waters of the island, but you must bring your own fishing equipment because the management of the tourism object does not provide it. The Dutungan Island also offers many restaurants and lodgings for the visitors who want to stay overnight on the island. Listener, that was our segment of Indonesian Wonder featuring Dutungan Island in South Sulawesi Province. Tomorrow we will meet again with another interesting topic. Goodbye for now.
Terima kasih.
Listener, thank you. You're still with us in the Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world, on 3325 kHz and voinews.id.
Listeners, welcome back in our regular segment, Miscellany. In today's edition, we present you information on UGMS's to handle corona transmission by Siaga Mudik application. Stay with us at www.voinews.id. Becoming a tradition to celebrate Eid al-Fitr at hometown, or well known as coming home. But in the COVID-19 pandemic condition, coming home becomes susceptible in spreading the virus. Gajah Mada University, UGM, assists to suppress the spread of COVID-19 through Siaga Mudik application. This application is developed through cooperation among provincial government of Central Java, family of Gajah Mada alumni, lecturers, and students of UGM Vocational School to explore the journeys of Central Java's travelers in a bid to prevent COVID-19 transmission. According to the data of Transportation Office of Central Java, the number of homecomers has reached 320,435 people who use public transportation, excluding the private motor vehicles. Siaga Mudik application facilitates residents who have to come home amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. This was stated by Imam Fahrur Rozi as technical manager. He also said that provincial government of Central Java obliged the residents who come home to fill the application and conduct self-quarantine for 14 days. The Siaga Mudik application can record the number of travelers based on location of travelers' destinations, address, and location of travelers stopped by, and also health condition of the travelers based on the pain symptoms and whether there is a congenital disease or the travelers. Later, the presence of absence or medical intervention from the nearest health office of the travelers is also based on the information output from the Siaga Mudik application. This application was made in less than 1 week. To strengthen the data, provincial government of Central Java also cooperates with WE Indonesia Community in Jakarta in preparing information management system of travelers collection through application of siagamudik.jatengprov.go.id. The system which is made is developed to assist search of everyone's travel history in order the government is able to describe the readiness of Central Java and to take a wise move in responding the COVID-19 transmission. That was Miss Lenny for today. Thanks for listening.
Resah dan gelisah menunggu di sini, di sudut sekolah, tempat yang kau janjikan. Ingin jumpa denganku walau mencuri waktu. Berdusta pada guru, malu aku malu. Ada semut merah yang berbaris di dinding, menatapku curiga. Seakan penuh tanya, sedang apa di sini? Menanti pacar jawabku. Sungguh aneh tapi nyata, takkan terlupa kisah kasih di sekolah dengan si dia. Tiada masa paling indah, masa-masa di sekolah. Tiada kisah paling indah, kisah kasih di sekolah. Malu, aku malu pada semut merah yang berbaris di dinding, menatapku curiga. Seakan penuh tanya, sedang apa di sini? Menanti pacar jawabku. Sungguh aneh tapi nyata, takkan terlupa kisah kasih di sekolah dengan si dia. Tiada masa paling indah, masa-masa di sekolah. Tiada kisah paling indah, kisah kasih di sekolah. Tiada masa paling indah, masa-masa di sekolah. Tiada kisah paling indah, kisah kasih di sekolah. Masa-masa paling indah. Kasih di sekolah,
listener, you're still with us in the Voice of Indonesia, from Indonesia for the world. Next, we are going to present to you the music corner, so stay tuned.
Hello listener of Voice of Indonesia, welcome back to Music Corner. Today we present a song by Ruth Sahanaya titled Keliru. Ruth Sahanaya, or Ute, is a pop diva of Indonesia. She began her singing career since 1987. Her name became too popular when she released the song Kaulah Segalanya. In addition to Kaulah Segalanya, Ute has also many hit songs such as Keliru. This song tells a story of sad memory between a couple lover because the beloved chooses another person. When the woman knows her lover unfaithful, she chooses to end their love. The song Keliru has also re-released by a talented young singer, Monita Tahalia, in Jazz Music Festival. Well, listener, let's listen to the song Keliru by Ruth Sahanaya. Enjoy the song.
Voice of Indonesia.
Alright, listener, it's all that we have in English program. Thank you very much for listening, but stay tuned with us in the Voice of Indonesia from Indonesia for the World on 3325 kHz and voinews.id. In the meantime, do not forget to like and comment on our Facebook fan page, The Voice of Indonesia, or follow and mention us at Twitter, at @voiindonesia. And send us email on voi@voinews.id.